Hi, and welcome, everyone. I'm Melinda Wittstock, and this is Who's Wanted? Getting Legal in the USA, an inside look at the politics of immigration from Capital News Connection in Washington. We're a land of immigrants, but who gets to be an American these days is sparking anger, even fear. It's setting Republican against Republican, Democrat against Democrat. And already, it's a definitive issue in campaign 2008.
The immigration system is in crisis. Our nation is not secure. Families are being torn apart.
We should not say that Spanish-speaking or working-class immigrants are only good enough to be temporary workers and cannot earn the right to be a part of the American family.
From time to time, remember that these are God's children. They must come into our country legally, but they have enriched our culture and our nation as every generation of immigrants before them.
The problem with this immigration plan is it has no real unifying purpose. It's a typical Washington mess.
We all know the stats, some 12 million immigrants here illegally. Some on the right want to send them all home, build a fence to keep them out. On the left, many believe companies are using immigrants to drive down wages for Americans. So it's little wonder the Senate's fragile bipartisan coalition has fallen apart, at least for now. The controversial bill dying a death by a drip-drip of amendments, and President Bush's hopes of landmark legislation in the remainder of his term apparently dashed. But Washington's inability to solve the crisis will disappoint a majority of Americans from all parties who say they want Congress to give immigrants a chance to get legal and to tighten border security.
My name's Sharon Jones. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I've been reading quite a bit of information about what Congress and the President have proposed on immigration reform. I'm not sure which way I feel about it. I recognize that the people that often come here from foreign countries do so legally and illegally and work extremely hard and have to fear being captured and deported. But I'm not sure that instant citizenship is the way I think it should go either.
This is John Petrie and my wife Sheila. We're from Angola, Indiana. We need to secure the borders. After that, let them come in through the green card process and do it properly. No exceptions. I'd like to see us use current technology. Let's use cameras. Let's use flyover devices. A fence is pretty crude, but it would work.
I'm Burnett Murphy, and I'm from Monterey County, California. There are a number of migrant families there, and they provide a great service to the nation, and there is a great deal of red tape. And so if they can make it easier for people to either attain some form of permanency, I'm in favor of that.
In a moment, CNC's Jody Breisler from the Capitol. Also, lawmakers from Illinois, Arizona, and California join me here in the CNC studio. But first, a tale of two states. How is this controversy hitting home in Ohio and Colorado? We have three reports. First, David C. Barnett from Cleveland Station, WCPN.
We're standing in Hilario Ramirez's backyard. It shows off the results of his 17 years here in Painesville, Ohio's landscaping industry. He's laid out wooden planters and brick walkways, which lead you to a central pond with lily pads. It's a far cry from his days as a teenager back in 1990 when he snuck across the Mexican border in pursuit of the American dream.
I was 17 years old, and I was so excited I was coming to the United States.
And his destination was the fertile soil of Northeast Ohio. This area is home to dozens of nurseries. In fact, the nursery industry brings in $100 million a year. But the work isn't very pleasant. You spend all day digging up ornamental trees and shrubbery in the fields and then wrapping burlap around a ball of roots at the base of each plant.
I would say each person would dig about 200 plants a day, and it's really, really hard.
Ramirez eventually got a green card, and now he's a salesman for one of the local growers. The arduous nature of the work means that a nursery manager like Jay Daly is constantly faced with employee turnover. He says that the stream of Mexican workers that flows into Painesville keeps his Sunleaf nurseries in business. He claims that he can't find people in this country willing to do the work.
Americans don't raise their children to work in the field. We'd prefer to have them work in other places we think correlate with success.
This past May, federal agents from Immigration and Customs Enforcement came sweeping through town with warrants to pick up illegal workers. The government claims 24 people were apprehended. Hilario Ramirez says the impact was far greater.
Pretty much the town seems pretty empty. There was nobody in the stores, and people, they were scared.
Things have calmed down since then, but people are much more cautious. Looking around his backyard patio, Ramirez says he's come a long way from those early days when he spent hours in the fields digging trees out of the Painesville soil. Suddenly, he gets a bemused look on his face.
And I think that's what the government is trying to do with us, trying to dig us up from the ground and trying to change us.
But the hardworking Mexicans of Northeast Ohio are tough to dig up and toss out because they've grown some deep roots. I'm David C. Barnett in Painesville.
I'm Katie Getz in Greeley, Colorado. 6 months have passed since a raid on the meatpacking plant here saw the arrests of 262 illegal immigrants. Many people are still talking about it in this mostly rural town an hour north of Denver. Even though a few parishioners at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church were detained in the raid, Pastor Bernie Schmitz reflects on the raid as nothing less than providential.
Not in the sense that God sent the raid, but more in the sense that this crisis has given to us an opportunity as a community to talk about an issue that's sort of been the big elephant sitting in the room.
Greeley Mayor Tom Selders recently took his perspective on immigration reform to Washington, D.C. He talked specifically about the negative effects of the raid.
I will uphold the law of this land, but that doesn't mean I can't question some of the tactics that are involved in that law.
Selders returned to mixed but passionate reviews, with anti-immigrant groups saying he was undermining the law. Selders says those critics are a small but vocal group. Sylvia Martinez agrees. She chairs Latinos Unidos, a human rights activist group.
I feel that it is important to react, because by not reacting or speaking up against these certain few, it's basically fueling their fire.
Law enforcement officials say they're just doing their job. Of the 262 illegal immigrants detained in the raid, Weld County District Attorney Ken Buck was able to prosecute only 18 for identity theft. He says gangs and methamphetamine trafficking are some of the other problems within Greeley's illegal immigrant community.
Right now, 17% of our jail population identify themselves as non-U.S. citizens. We spend a few million dollars transporting people out of the county because we have an overcrowded jail.
It's also crowded at Our Lady of Peace, where several hundred parishioners gather for Spanish Mass on Sunday. Father Schmitz reads a statement supporting the Senate's immigration reform bill. He says the bill is a compromise, but also a step forward. He encourages the congregation to contact their senators, although some of those parishioners may not be eligible to vote. For Capital News Connection, I'm Katie Getz in Greeley, Colorado.
In the Capitol, I'm Jody Breisler. While people in states like Colorado and Ohio deal with the realities of immigration, lawmakers here may be changing the whole system. The immigration debate here centers on tightening security, a temporary guest worker program, requirements for legal immigration, and what to do with the millions who are here illegally. A group of senators from both parties put together what's called comprehensive immigration reform, but they immediately had to start defending it from deal-breaking changes and critics. Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says he's tired of his colleagues who complain about the reform, but don't propose anything else.
Our product is better than those who want to do nothing. Our product is better than empty rhetoric without a solution.
But that rhetoric is flying from every direction, and it's dividing the political parties. Republicans are torn between the needs of business and enforcing the rule of law. Some, like Texas Representative Lamar Smith, say a pathway to citizenship for immigrants here illegally is a no-go.
We will call it for what it is, and that is amnesty.
And many Democrats are caught between legalization, family reunification, and organized labor concerns. California Senator Barbara Boxer says a guest worker program will create an underclass of vulnerable immigrants who will harm American workers.
These are people who are just coming in with no particular skills. to take away the jobs of the people who are here.
And this is legislation that hasn't even made its way to the House of Representatives yet. Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she will not introduce anything until President Bush can promise 60 to 70 Republican votes. Even pro-reform sympathizers like Florida Republican Lincoln Diaz-Balart say this is going to be tough.
In this system, the president controls no votes. You know, each member of Congress votes his or her conscience.
President Bush has been promising to reform immigration since he took office in 2001. If the legislation doesn't pass before the presidential election heats up this fall, he could leave office with nothing. Ironically, this would be mostly because of congressional Republicans.
If you want to kill a bill, then you just go around America saying, this is amnesty. Or there are some words that elicit strong reactions. This bill isn't amnesty. For those who call it amnesty, they're just trying to, in my judgment, frighten people.
With the implosion of the Senate bill, prospects in the House look increasingly remote. Skeptics say we all might have to wait until 2009 for this to come up again.
Capital News Connections, Jody Breisler with the latest. So what should be done? What will it take for Congress to find a way to agree? Here with me, two Democratic representatives with differing perspectives on immigration reform, Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, Gabriel Giffords of Arizona, also a vocal opponent of the immigration bill, Republican Brian Bilbray of San Diego. Welcome.
Thank you.
An honor.
Thank you.
Representative Giffords, you first. More people are crossing illegally from Mexico into Arizona than anywhere else along this 2,000-mile border. Your district has about 115 miles of that border. What are your constituents telling you?
Arizona's tired of having a national immigration crisis literally and figuratively on our doorstep. In terms of being reimbursed for our expenses for law enforcement, in terms of the impact on our schools and our hospitals, we are on the front lines of a national crisis. We need to act now.
Does this bill go far enough on border security?
Well, what I like about the Senate version of the immigration reform is that there are triggers in place, that security measures have to be met before additional measures in terms of the visas move forward. I like the fact that we are increasing Border Patrol agents. If we don't secure the border, people are going to continue to come in illegally, and I believe that's important.
Representative Gutierrez, you're a co-sponsor of the House version of the bill. There's a lot of folks in your party, the Democratic Party, don't support this bill. What are the biggest stumbling blocks?
I think the biggest stumbling block actually is the lack of political courage. The Republican Party has done a very effective job, especially during the last election cycle, where they spent 80% of their dollars attacking Democrats for being weak on the border, weak on immigration reform. Do Democrats really want to risk their majority on the issue and lead? Another part of it is just what is comprehensive immigration reform? I mean, we hear so many people in the Democratic Party who want more and more without taking into consideration that there aren't enough Democrats to pass comprehensive immigration reform by themselves, and therefore you need to build a coalition as we have in our bipartisan approach to comprehensive immigration reform.
Well, let's turn to the politics a little bit of the Republican Party right now. Brian Bilbray, you are part of a coalition of some 100 Republican members in the House that oppose the Senate version of the bill. What do you say to President Bush, who says you're just trying to frighten people in your opposition?
We're saying, look at the history, Mr. Bush. What's frightening is that Washington is basically trying to revisit the 86 law that starts off by rewarding the illegal immigration. Both parties, Republican and Democrats, have wimped out when it's come down to the real source of illegal immigration, that's illegal employment. We had our problems in San Diego long before Arizona. We stood up and said we want to have enforcement along our border, and it moved it to Arizona. But until we do interior enforcement, both the Republicans and Democrats don't have the intestinal fortitude of taking on their buddies who are actually paying people to come here illegally and work cheap.
John McCain says, read the bill. There's employment verification and all sorts of measures in there, especially in that first 18 months.
The bill's 18 months. The fact is, we haven't done it in 18 to 20 years. The naivety of thinking that they're going to try to sell the American people on the fact of, don't worry, we will take care of it in 18 months. What I'd love to be able to do is let's take care of it in 18 months, and then let's come back and talk about what we're going to do with the people who are here illegally after we finally do some enforcement and crack down on Mr. McCain's buddies who are the employers who are paying people and hiring people. And that's the tough one.
You can't do it all at the border. That's why the men and women of the Border Patrol Council have opposed this bill, because it's still backing off and not taking care of the number one source of illegal immigration, and that's illegal employment.
Well, is there enough money and will to enforce tougher border security? Representative Gutierrez.
Absolutely there is. Look, the technology that we've used for a Social Security card, my great-granddad had a little piece of paper. My four-year-old grandson has the same technology, this little piece of paper. We call for biometrics, magnetic strip, just like when you go to the grocery store or a restaurant and they pass it through your credit card, it says approved or unapproved. We believe in interior enforcement. Part of that is getting identification that's foolproof and that employers can rely on. And we call for severe sanctions against employers who do employ. So we do the interior enforcement, we do the border enforcement, and that's how we get to the test.
Representative Gutierrez of Illinois, Brian Bilbray of California, Gabriel Giffords of Arizona. Stay with us. We're just going to take a short break. You're listening to Who's Wanted? Getting Legal in the USA, a special on the politics of immigration. Who benefits from failure to act on immigration reform? How does it impact our economy? And how should we choose who gets to be an American? Brains or brawn? Skills or family ties? Coming up, many countries use a point system, similar to that proposed in the ill-fated Senate bill. What would a point system mean in practice? For Asians, Hispanics, and American businesses. I'm Melinda Wittstock, and this is Capital News Connection from PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back. I'm Melinda Wittstock, and you're listening to Who's Wanted? Getting Legal in the USA. In a moment, we talk to a former INS commissioner, a director of a day labor center, and a business lobbyist. Still here with me in the studios, Republican Brian Bilbray of San Diego, a determined opponent of the bill, Democratic Representatives Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, and Gabriel Giffords of Arizona. Welcome back, everybody.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be back.
Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, one of the most controversial aspects of the bill that failed in the Senate was the point system. Among other things, it's really heavily weighted to favor MBAs, doctors, those with technical skills, and English speakers. And some say this is a very elitist policy, immigration by invitation only. What's your perspective?
Well, I think that we should value and honor work, whether it's a chemist or an engineer. And they're all necessary to the vitality and to the strength of our economy. And 400,000 low-skill, low-wage jobs every year. What are we going to do? Put PhDs out in the fields picking grapes? That's the kind of mix
that does actually happen. If you talk to, say, someone from Canada, the Canadian system has a point system. You have MBAs driving taxis. Gabriel Giffords, when you think of your district, who are the people that we need most?
In the 8th Congressional District, where I reside, we have growing industries of agriculture and also construction. For my farmers and my ranchers in the rural areas, they're really struggling right now to have enough labor to bring in the crops. And literally, we have crops that are dying on the vines. For the construction industry, Arizona is now the fastest growing state in the nation. We're really challenged to find the skilled labor force to do the drywall, to lay concrete, masons. Now, when it comes to the high-tech industry, I hear from my employers that they're really struggling right now
out to have enough PhD scientists, mathematicians, and engineering. The point system is unique to the Senate bill. The House bill, of course, doesn't have that. I think it has engendered at least a debate on what type of people we want to actually have coming here, and it's complicated.
Brian Bilbray, this is a land of immigrants. Who do you think should be allowed in?
Well, my mother was glad that she was allowed in, but she was a college graduate, but she got in because she married an American sailor during World War II. We not only have a right, though, to have the American immigration policy serve America first and the immigrants second, not just for America, but for those immigrants who are coming here, is the fact that the proper balance, and I think when it really comes down to it, my district's a good example. I have very, very high tech, and I have more ag in my district than many states, that there is a balance here of what and who should come in, and we should be making that an intelligent decision. I think we need to look at a true temporary worker program that allows people to come here, work at the low-skill jobs, return back to the country with a lump sum of money so that you can create middle class in parts of the world that need it desperately.
But I think at the same time, there are 144 million workers in our workforce today, 79 million baby boomers. In 20 years, the youngest baby boomer will be 64 years old. The oldest will be 81. 60% of our workforce is going to literally disappear, and we do not have the population to take their place. So you know what kind of immigrants we should bring to America? The immigrants we need in order to keep our economic
and
vitality.
Who decides who we need? Is it the Labor Department per this point system, or is it business?
It's the business opportunities that exist out there. If they're in agriculture, they should be in agriculture. But look, we have 5,000 low skill visas a year. That's all we give out, 5,000. But we create 400,000 low skill jobs.
And can I just jump in here too? The problem with the point system, as I see it, is that by getting away from family unification, we're putting tremendous stress on individuals, whether you're a high-tech worker or whether you're an agriculture worker. And when you think about people coming here to the country, not having their spouse, not having their children with them, either they're going to try to bring them in illegally or they're not going to want to stay here.
Okay, but in all fairness, is it somebody that you will live in your household, be part of your household, or is it your second cousin? And that, I think, is a distinct
difference. Brian Bilbray, Gabriel Giffords, Luis Gutierrez, please stay with us. We're going to talk more about all this, and believe me, there's a lot to talk about later in the show. More on the realities on the ground, the demographics, and the electoral calculus for 2008. It's hard to imagine an immigration bill that can please everyone. In a moment, what big business wants and what our economy needs? Brains or brawn? Cheap labor? Technical innovation? But first, the U.S. Census Bureau estimates the Asian population will more than double by 2050. Many Asians came here as skilled workers, and then they brought their families. But the proposed new points system will make family reunification much tougher. CNC's Yenmei Xia is an immigrant from China, and she has this report from Northern Virginia.
I went to college in Beijing and earned two master's degrees here in the U.S., but none of my classwork even compares to the difficulty of learning the U.S. immigration rules. There are so many regulations. Bureaucrats often give conflicting instructions. Just when I thought I figured it all out, a change in the definition of one word took my first full-time job away. I am just one of many immigrants who are navigating through this maze. 28-year-old Chen Yuan is also from China. Inside her suburban Northern Virginia condo, Chen is plugging numbers into an Excel spreadsheet. Her pet beagle rests at her feet.
Since our company is located in Burton Springs, Maryland, the boss is kind of like, okay, you can work from home half of the week.
Chen came to the U.S. 6 years ago. She earned a master's degree in economics from the University of Michigan and has been working under a temporary worker visa as an accountant. Now she's trying to convince her company to sponsor her for U.S. permanent residency. Chen has to pay about $6,000 for application and attorney fees. Both her and her company will be closely scrutinized by the U.S. Labor Department.
You have to make your employer satisfied with you, everything. So you are afraid to ask more from them.
She expects to wait 5 years before getting a permanent resident or green card. Every year, U.S. immigration officials give out half the green cards to family members of U.S. citizens or permanent residents. About a third go to refugees and a lottery program. And only about 20% go to skilled workers like Chen. Now, some in Congress want to reduce family-based immigration and bring in more skilled workers. Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions supports the idea.
You would evaluate people who apply based on their skills, education, language, and age. That's good, isn't it?
So, under one proposal, Chen would gain points for speaking English, having an advanced degree, and being young. Sessions says that skilled workers like her are more likely to contribute to the U.S. economy. Immigration attorney Matthew Glinsman disagrees. He says immigrant families are productive engines of U.S. society.
They're much more likely to contribute by starting small businesses because they have the combined income of the whole family resource. And family business is what the United States is really founded on.
According to the U.S. Census, Asian-owned businesses have been growing twice as fast as the national average. Many are family-owned. Karen Narasaki is president of the Asian American Justice Center. She says many Asians learn English and gain skills after they came to the U.S. and become successful. She's worried that the new proposal would block hardworking immigrants and favor the privileged elite.
People from certain Asian countries and from Latin America are going to be at the bottom. And so you're going to build in a class stratification tied to race and ethnicity that we think is unhealthy.
Chen, the accountant, says no matter what the rules are, she's determined to get her green card. Both Chen and I are the only children in our families. We hope to bring our parents over from China one day. We're frustrated with the current system and worried that changes would make things even worse. For Capital News Connection, I'm Ye Mei Xie. In Washington.
It used to be that Asians took the brunt of anti-immigrant feeling in the U.S. Now the more jingoistic among us are focusing on Mexicans. Jose Carreño is the Washington reporter for the newspaper El Universal of Mexico City. Welcome, Jose.
A pleasure to be here.
How does Mexico see the debate raging on immigration here in this country?
On the one hand, there is surprise by the depth of the reaction against the people who tries to fix the immigration system. There is concern for the anger that is being expressed against Mexicans. There is the feeling that there is even some racial overtones in this whole debate. And of course, the concerns and the worries about not only the people who is already here, but also about family reunification.
So why do so many Mexicans want to come here? Is it they can just be paid more here than
That is, again, a complex question. The economy in Mexico has not been able to create about 1 million jobs a year for a number of years. So there is a big deficit on job creation. There is also the fact that the northern part of Mexico has progressed, has developed. And curious enough, now the migrants do not come from the northern part of Mexico, but from center and southern Mexico, which are the more undeveloped parts of the country. So it is an economic magnet phenomena.
Jose, what happens if nothing gets done?
You would see the hostility, the harassing, the problem against the Latino workers rising, even hate crimes against them rising. You will see also the exploitation, discrimination, and this would have an impact not only in the image of the United States abroad, but in the relations of the United States with the rest of the continent. Many of the undocumented, about half of them are Mexicans, but about 25% of them are Central Americans and South Americans, and there are no distinctions about that.
You know, a lot of people here have been critical of the 1986 legislation signed into law by President Reagan as having given amnesty and as laying the groundwork for a lot of the problems we see now. To what extent have there been problems created as a result of that legislation that have actually incentivized people to come here illegally?
What happened is that there were more enforcement in the border. So people that used to come for, let's say, a week or for the day, in some case of the laborers on the border, were finding harder and harder to go back and forth. So if their job was here, they started to remain for the days, for weeks. And then at the end of the day, it was easier to bring their families than to be risking crossing again and again and again. But that is only one part of the problem. The other part of the problem, the 1986 bill, and there are quite a few veterans of that debate in Congress. They do not want to remember that, by the way. There was a measure to watch over employers, but that proviso was never enforced. So it is a hell of their own doing, by the way.
What would Mexico like to see from a guest worker program?
A guest worker program.
Just a guest worker program? One that works.
The way I see it, a guest worker program where the rights of the workers are respected, because that is a big part of the problem. All too often in this whole debate, something that is overseen is that the employers hire undocumented aliens, and then suddenly when it's time to pay, they either underpay or denounce them to immigration to avoid paying. That shouldn't happen.
Jose Carreño, D.C. reporter for El Universal in Mexico City. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Here with me now, Bill Threlkeld, director of a day labor center in Herndon, Virginia. Doris Meisner, a former commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service under President Clinton, and now a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. Also, Lynn Shotwell, executive director of the American Council on International Personnel, an organization that helps employers wanting to bring in skilled workers understand the law. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Threlkeld, to you first. What's an average day like at the Herndon Day Labor Center?
Well, at the Herndon Official Workers Center, most of our clients are Hispanic men. They come and wait for work. Before the center was established, they used to wait on a corner, 150 to 200 on a corner, and it became a problem for the town of Herndon.
Are they mostly illegal?
We don't know. We don't ask that question. There certainly are studies that would indicate that, but we don't officially ask that question.
And so these folks are doing what sort of jobs around the house, that kind of thing?
Exactly. Springtime is our biggest season. We have a lot of people with landscaping jobs, spring projects, clean up, that kind of thing.
Doris Meisner, there's a lot of debate in this country about the type of people that we want to immigrate to the United States. Cleaners, nannies, farms and factories needing low-wage workers. There's also a demand for highly technically skilled people, engineers, computer, IT people, entrepreneurs. What does our economy really, really need, and what does this bill give them?
Well, our economy needs all kinds of workers. Most explicitly, it needs workers both at the high-skilled end of the spectrum and at the low-skilled end. It's much more than just wanting these workers. It's that we're in a different period demographically. We're now an aging society. That's never been the case in the United States before. We are no longer producing as many younger workers from our native workforce as the jobs are that are available. So immigration is a very important supplement for that.
Lynn Shotwell, what are American businesses saying about the compromise bill that we're discussing in the Congress this summer?
Our concern with the bills that are in front of Congress is that we are going to be throwing out 40 years of experience that has worked and served us very well with employers choosing which immigrants they want to hire to an untested point system where bureaucrats are going to establish points and then employers will be expected to choose from that pool of workers.
So in other words, the Labor Department's making the choice about who you should hire instead of the companies themselves being able to decide who they want to hire.
That's one of our concerns, yes.
And so, Doris Meisner, what impact would that have?
It's hard to say. As Lynn has said, this is absolutely untested, and it isn't even that bureaucrats are establishing these points. Politicians are establishing these points just in the last several weeks through negotiations. And so you have a system of evaluating people and screening people that is a result of bargaining rather than any kind of evidence of who are the kinds of people that we need. We know, of course, that we will get very highly educated, highly skilled people through this system because it's weighted in that direction. But whether there will be actual jobs available for them is not certain at all.
Last time around, 2 years ago, when immigration came before the Senate, big business was a big lobbyist in favor of the legislation. This time it's a little more tepid, Lynn.
Well, 2 years ago, we had a proposal in place that really had been studied very carefully and that was carefully crafted to meet the needs of U.S. businesses. I mean, the simple fact is that American companies that are recruiting at American universities are finding that over half of the graduates with advanced degrees in math and science and engineering are foreign nationals. we need to be able to hire these people. We want to bring them into our system. We want to welcome them into our economy and make them productive members of our society. This new bill doesn't provide the certainty that we will be able to do that.
Now, it's not just about technical skill, though. I mean, a lot of companies want cheap labor. Bill Threlkeld, what do you say to Democrats, unions, others who believe that illegals and guest workers are really being used to suppress the wages of Americans?
I think that the way that our employers got workers before has changed. A lot of the companies that might have done some of these things are not doing them. You used to be able to ask your kids or your neighbors to do these things. They're no longer interested in doing those. So you've got to have some support for this brawn part of the brain versus brawn. You've got to have that support.
Doris, a lot of polling is showing that most Americans think immigrants actually weaken the economy by using public services such as hospitals but not paying taxes. How much evidence is there for that? Because there are some contradictory studies as well, of course.
Well, there's no question that immigration has both costs and benefits with it. But overall, the research shows that immigration is a plus for the United States. And immigrants, both legal and illegal, in fact, do pay taxes. They do contribute to the federal tax system, largely through Social Security payments that most employers deduct from people's wages. They also pay sales taxes. They clearly are consumers at the local level. You do find in areas of concentration that there are services, particularly education. Education is probably the most heavily impacted institution.
Some economists have found that they contribute as much as $7 billion from Social Security deductions alone, while obviously claiming no benefits because of their illegal status.
Well, that's correct, and that's actually one of the hypocrisies that exists in the way that we are doing immigration today. We are perfectly prepared to allow that money to come into federal tax coffers. We use it to balance budget deficits, and yet costs are born at the local level, and we have no means and interest, at least at this point, in trying to help cushion the impact of those costs.
Lynn Shotwell, I want to go back to Yanmei Xia's piece, which we've just heard, because this whole issue of reuniting families, which has been a cornerstone of immigration policy in the United States for almost four decades, transitioning to this point system. Are skills versus family, are these mutually exclusive, or can family reunification actually be beneficial for the economy as well?
I think both streams are very beneficial to the economy. I mean, even high-skilled workers bring their families as well. And if you just look at, for example, the Intel math and science competition, most of the children who are in that competition are children of immigrants, and so they bring their skills and their talents too. I don't think that this debate should be set up as employers versus families. It's not a limited pool of visas that are available. We can accommodate both.
When it comes to enforcing the law, whether it's the current law or enforcing this new proposed legislation, if it does become law, we've seen over the past year and a half, 2 years, a lot of cities, a lot of local authorities taking matters into their own hands. That can have a chilling and disruptive effect also for business. Lynn, what's your perspective on that?
I represent large multinational employers with operations in all 50 states. Suddenly, they're having to figure out how do they verify the legal status of employees in every single state in a different manner. And that's very, very difficult for employers to get their arms around.
Doris, speak to me from the perspective of your former role at the INS. When you think of Homeland Security, will they be able to handle all the changes Congress is proposing?
This is an enormous workload that is created by this legislation. There will have to be more capacity for handling the legalization program. But from the enforcement standpoint, an employer enforcement regime that actually can work, that the Department of Homeland Security can actually enforce effectively, will be extremely important and will help to move the effectiveness of immigration enforcement forward in a very substantial and important way.
Thank you all for joining us. Bill Threlkeld, director of a day labor center in Herndon, Virginia. Doris Meisner, a former commissioner of the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service, or INS, and now a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute. Also, Lynn Shotwell, executive director of the American Council on International Personnel. You're listening to Who's Wanted? Getting Legal in the USA, a special on the politics of immigration. Coming up, demographics and the electoral calculus. More from CNC correspondent Jody Breisler and our panel of lawmakers, Brian Bilbray of California, Luis Gutierrez of Illinois, and Gabriel Giffords of Arizona. This is Capital News Connection from PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to Who's Wanted? Getting Legal in the USA. I'm Melinda Wittstock. Mention the word immigration and passions run deep. Here in the quarters of Congress, it's no different. The House Minority Leader, John Boehner, Republican of Ohio, didn't exactly hold back on what he thought of the Senate bill. A piece of, he said. Apparently, a lot of senators had a similar view. Continuing efforts to amend the Senate version so tested the patience of Majority Leader Harry Reid, the Democrat of Nevada, he called the president's bluff. The votes just weren't there, 15 short of the 60 the bill's supporters needed to prevail. Now there's little chance of progress this year. So what is the cost of inaction? Our lawmaker panel is still with us, Democrat Gabriel Giffords of Arizona, Republican Brian Bilbray of California, and Democrat Luis Gutierrez of Illinois. But first, we look at the demographics, the realities of immigration on the ground, and what it means for both political parties' prospects in 2008 and beyond. Again, Capital News Connection's Jody Breisler.
The conventional wisdom on Capitol Hill has it that if comprehensive immigration reform does not happen before the 08 presidential election heats up in August, it won't happen at all, at least not before President Bush is out of office. At the same time, the immigration debate is really affecting the presidential candidates. Take the New Hampshire Republican debate. When his colleagues went after him for supporting the legislation, Arizona Senator John McCain had to go on the defensive.
Rudy, you just described our legislation, so I'd be glad to have further conversation with you because it does account for people who are here illegally. It does have an employment verification system, and it weeds out those who shouldn't be here, and it gives others a chance to remain in this country.
Colorado Congressman Tom Tancredo has been the most vehement anti-immigration candidate campaigning on the issue. He says he has no problem going after members of his own party.
I'm willing to do whatever necessary to try to stop this piece of legislation, and that includes go after any Republican that votes for it, because the Republicans can stop this.
This infighting isn't just among the Republicans. At a recent Democratic debate, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson took a shot at the immigration bill.
I would not support legislation that divided families. I would not support legislation that builds a wall, a Berlin-type wall between two countries, the way the bill in the Congress exists today.
The current fight over immigration is also foreshadowing a larger debate over the changing makeup of America.
Today
long-term, bigger
march.
Issues
tomorrow
are at stake.
We vote! Today we march! Tomorrow we vote!
As the number of immigrants in the United States goes up, so does their political power, even if they don't vote. The Constitution says all population must be counted when determining how many congressional seats and electoral votes each state gets.
The one man, one vote may be translated into one person living in an area, one vote, whether they're citizens or not.
That's demographer William Fry. He says census data shows states in the South and West, like Florida and Texas, will benefit, while the Northeast and Rust Belt states like Ohio will lose congressional seats and power. Presidential candidate Duncan Hunter's state of California should gain two seats by 2030.
But like other anti-immigration legislators, Congressman Hunter says he doesn't care if his state benefits from the growing illegal population.
I think all the state, the representation of all states should be based on legal population. And I don't think we should fall prey to the temptation to keep our borders open on the basis that somehow it's going to benefit us in a selfish way.
California is a reliable Democratic state when it comes to presidential elections. In swing states like Florida, which could gain 9 seats in the next 25 years, how immigrants vote could determine who the state and perhaps the country will elect. And then there are the states losing population. Ohio is set to lose 4 seats, but Fry says it would lose more without immigration.
It's not one of the fastest growing immigrant states, but if it wouldn't be for immigration, Ohio's rate of population growth would be very minuscule. I mean, it would be barely perceptible.
If the numbers prove true, Ohio could lose its role as a crucial swing state. Ohio's senators have been rather quiet in the current immigration debate. Demographer Fry says that could come back to hurt them.
They may live to regret that, as many of these immigrants wind up to be voters a couple elections down the road.
Even though immigrants make up a growing portion of the American population, not all vote in big numbers.
Capital News Connections, Jody Breisler. So perhaps this is the calculus of some in the Republican Party, like RNC Chairman Mel Martinez of Florida. Brian Bilbray, doesn't the Republican Party need Hispanic votes? Don't you run the risk of losing this important electoral bloc by alienating them?
I think you win any group or subgroup by doing the right thing. I mean, the Cuban-American community has strongly supported Republicans, not because Republicans try to engineer special legislation just for them, but the fact is they oppose Castro, they oppose communism, and that has created a whole group of generations of Republican supporter. I just don't see that any way that politics is served by creating special agendas for certain groups separate from the other. You need to make sure to remind everybody that all of us are Americans, all laws should be applied equally, and there shouldn't be special legislative strategies based on one ethnic group as opposed to another.
Representative Gutierrez, how do you respond to what Brian Bilbray has just said?
I think number one, in reference to Cuban Americans, they have the most generous immigration policy that we've ever seen in the United States of America. They simply show up. If they show up in San Diego and try to cross the border, they just claim asylum and they're immediately let into the country. So let's understand that. Number two, there's a community of people. And I think what Mr. Bilbray and others need to understand, that they're truly our neighbors. So when I go to church, I sit in the pew with undocumented. When I shop, we shop together. When I enroll my kids in school, they're enrolling their kids in school. They're an integral part of our community. We see them as our neighbors, as our friends. We see them as people who build communities with us. And so we want fairness and dignity for them. And to that extent, we're going to vote for them and for their right to become an integral part of our society.
Is there a racial element in the opposition to immigration?
I certainly would hope not. The fact is that we're talking about this chain migration and wanting to change our immigration policy so that family isn't the key cornerstone. Like, the question could be asked, is it